Rage cascaded over me. How dare these men betray me after all that I had done for them? I swung my axe, killing or dismembering with each blow. I used the blade, spike, and butt of my weapon to bring down my troops. Flailing limbs and blurred sword blades surrounded me as I poured death into my newfound enemies. Pain flashed through my thigh as a blade pierced me. I broke free and spiked the soldier through the face. The water running off the top of the pyramid was running red with blood. The backdrop of the light-sucking altar and its spinning black tendrils were so close. I had to reach it. Razor-like steel cut through my back, breaking the coat of mail and splattering my blood into the rain.
"No!"
I bellowed, turning and striking down the soldier who had dared to touch me.
"You cannot kill me!"
The power of the artifact was thick upon me. I killed two others in one mighty swing. More wounds were inflicted on my flesh. I fell to my knees, but continued fighting. I cut a soldier's leg off and finished him when he hit the ground. That was all. I pushed myself up, slowly, shakily, bleeding from many punctures and lacerations. Dozens of bodies sprawled upon the pyramid top or across the stairs. My soldiers, my countrymen, all of them dead or dying. A few feet away, the final stone demon crumbled and flaked away into the rivers of blood and rain. Captain Thrall knelt upon its back, broken sword still clenched in one hand. His massive chest heaved with the exertion, and blood drizzled down his face from his lacerated scalp. "Lord Mashado," he said. "Captain Thrall?" I nodded. We both looked at the darkness of the artifact, and then back at each other.
"'Tis not meant to be, my general. 'Tis not meant for men to use such a black thing."
His skull was visible through missing parts of his face. "With it, I can rule the world.
Thou art lost without thy witch," the giant stated simply.
The priestess's body lay nearby, partially submerged.
"I will bring her back," I hissed.
"My ancestors came to my dreams and told me of thy plans. Thou wast destined to fail and open the way for the return of the dark forces of the ancients through thy failure. My people are gone. I am the last. Yet I have not forgotten our sagas."
The giant captain gradually heaved himself to his feet, shaking from the many grievous wounds on his body. A lesser man would have just lain down and died.
"Ye shall not pass."
"Never."
I used my axe to lever myself forward.
"It is mine. I have made a vow to the spirits. I will protect this artifact until the end of time. No man will look upon its evil and live."
The captain turned and stumbled toward the altar.
"It's mine!"
I screamed as I hurled my heavy axe across the distance. The blade sunk deeply into his back. It was a lethal blow. The captain fell forward into the swirling bands of crackling black energy. He bellowed in pain as the evil tore into his flesh, searing him, burning him. He was turned over and spun in the maelstrom of darkness. The bands sunk and bonded into his very skin, like a twisted inking, an evil living tattoo.
"I vow to keep it from you."
He was engulfed by the power. The whites of his eyes disappeared, to be replaced by solid, inky blackness. He screamed in agony. There was an explosion of color and energy as lightning struck the top of the pyramid. Pain and heat surged up through my armor, burning me and hurling me aside. I fell upon the stairs, rolling and tumbling, through the torrents of water, down, down into the darkness. I gasped as the old man removed his hands from my head. I was once again myself. The jungle pyramid and its unholy storm were gone, replaced by the eerily silent 1940s Polish town.
"Holy shit!"
I said. I felt terribly weak.
"What happened?"
"In his mind too long," the old man said softly. "His great strain."
"The captain. Thrall. He is the tattooed man."
"Yes. Cursed like the rest of us. Always there is a catch with these things. How you say, I think, he got screwed."
"Indeed. Cursed to guard an evil artifact for the last 500 years. I could think of lots better ways to pass the time." "But there's more?" I asked. There were still questions to be answered. "Lord Machado failed. That evil priestess chick got shot before they could finish the ceremony. Yet somehow he's still alive today. How did he become the cursed one?"
"There is small bit of memory left. Only short time while he is still human, I think. Still, that I must show you."
"You have to show me now, Mordecai," I pleaded. "If I can know how he became what he is, then I can know how to defeat him."
"Not yet. Too much strain. And rest I must."
"I can do it," I answered. "I have to be ready."
"No, boy. Not ready. You wake up. Be ready for fight. Big fight for you today."
"Big fight?"
"Yes. Much big."
He pointed his fingers and made shooting noises.
"Much fight."
"You got any more little wooden carvings you want to send back with me?" I asked hopefully. "In case I need to roast any vampires?"
"Sorry, boy. I surprised that work my own self."
"How could it, anyway? I'm no expert of physics, but how can I take an immaterial thing into the material world?"
"Boy, you have much to learn. Even spirit is matter, just much finer. Much simpler time when I used to hunt monsters. Shoot them with gun. Bang. Dead monster. Nice and simple. Monsters nowadays all complicated and hard to make dead."
"So any chance you might be able to scrounge up some toys then?" He shrugged his thin shoulders.
"I try. When time comes, I have something for help. Now go."
He shooed me away. I turned to leave.
"One last thing."
"Yeah?" I stood barefooted in the snow while I waited for him. He seemed to be trying to find the words.
"Spit it out, Mordecai.
Apparently I've got monsters to kill."
"Boy," he regarded me solemnly. "On this day, try very hard not to get dead."
"I will try," I promised. The Hind tore across the sky at rapid speed and dangerously low altitude. I awoke to the thrumming of the blades, the deafening roar of the engines, and the piped-in music from the doors, Riders on the Storm. Julie's head was resting on my shoulder. A lock of her hair had strayed from under her helmet and draped down her face. I brushed it back. She woke up and smiled tiredly. She was still holding my hand. Harbinger signaled for all of us to put in our earpieces so that we could communicate and do a radio check.
"Wake up, sleepyheads. We're only 10 minutes out. Skippy is swinging wide around Corinth. His people have an agreement with the elves. No orcs on elf land, no elves on his. We'll be coming in from the south, and we'll be setting down in a designated clearing. Feds have already gotten us on radio and are even tracking us for surface-to-air missiles. Seedy bastards.
I hope they don't get twitchy, Milo said.
I hate the government, Sam stated coldly. Remind me again why we're working with them.
They need us, we need them, Harbinger said.
Not to be a jerk about it, but how exactly do we get paid for this?
Holly asked.
Saving the world don't pay the bills.
Government representatives don't get to claim puff. By being here, we will get at least an assist. Even that is worth a small fortune on a master.
Harbinger pulled his revolver, checked the rounds, spun the cylinder, and reholstered.
Only I talk to the Wendigo. Everybody else stay way the hell back. He ain't friendly. When we go after the cursed one, let the feds go in first. At that point, we're just observers. Let them do the bleeding. Pitt?
Yes, sir.
Damn it, call me Earl. Sir is the boss. Have you learned anything new? Is Mordecai Barica still in your dreams?
No, and yes. I've seen things, but I don't know what's going to be able to help us.
Give us the short version, he ordered.
I quickly told the others about the human Lord Machado and his army, about the ancient city, about the evil priestess Karinaha and her dark priest, about the artifact, the ceremony, the sacrifice, and finally, the tattooed man.
I've spoken with him, I said, just now in my dream. It was real. He was heading toward Montgomery. He's coming for the artifact, and he swears he's going to kill me.
I don't care how bad everybody thinks this guy is. MHI don't roll over and take it from no 500-year-old pukes, Sam said. If he shows up, we cap his trash. That's simple. Fricking magic tattoo bullshit. I've got a magic tattoo. It's a frog with a banjo and it's on my ass. I got it in Singapore.
Classy, Holly said.
Want to see it sometime?
He asked as he removed his can of Copenhagen from his armor and snapped his wrist repeatedly.
I'll pass, thanks.
There was something else. The old man warned me. He said, we're going to have a big fight today. He didn't say what, but I got the impression it was going to be bad.
Figures. Anything else?
Nope.
Lee? Give everybody the rundown on what we've gotten from the archives, Harbinger ordered. Anything that might prove useful.
Sure. The diminutive hunter cleared his throat. There were no records of a conquistador general named Lord Machado anywhere. There were, however, some signs pointing to what was called the Lost Expedition. Early in the 1500s, the very first group dispatched into the interior, same basic area where Orellano would later discover the Amazon, but this group was never heard from again. All of the records about this expedition were destroyed by the military governor at the Isle of the Cross, which is what they called Brazil back then. Even Walter Raleigh mentioned this lost expedition in his writings about El Dorado. Looking at what Owen has told us, I'm betting that that was Lord Machado's group.
What about the artifact or the old ones?
Just vague references to great and terrible evil. Lots of old hunters have mentioned it in their writings, but I get the impression that none of them really knew what they were. Barica's journal had the most about them.
And?
Eldritch horrors, to paraphrase some Lovecraft, horrible things that date back to before mankind. Real, serious, evil, bad stuff. About the artifact itself? Barica thought that it predated this world and was from somewhere else. I was kind of lost on that part. The journal was in Polish, and I had to use a computer translator. It can be kind of hard to understand.
He isn't much better in person, I mumbled.
The first people recorded to have had it were the ancient Midianites, followed by the Assyrians. How it wound up in South America is anybody's guess. Supposedly it grants the user the power of the old ones. Control of time, space, energy, matter, that kind of thing. Anybody who tries to use it dies, unless you are one of the special people.
Special? Holly asked. Like they ride the little bus to school? No, I can't think of a better word for it. Once in a while someone comes along who has the ability to actually use this thing. Since the world is still here, we can assume that none of them have been successfully united with it yet. Except, of course, Lord Mashado.
The prophecy from my dream, I thought out loud. Just thinking about the black obelisk in the unnatural cavern made my skin crawl.
Anything else? Harbinger asked.
Just that if this thing is activated by the right person, which we've got, and the right time, which is apparently tomorrow night, at the right place, which according to Ray Shackelford is right here, then we're pretty much boned. Stop them, and we save the world.
Good thing, Milo said as he spit some sunflower seeds into a paper cup.
I like the world. It would suck to blow it up, especially since I'm engaged now.
What? Get out of here, Harbinger said. No way.
Most of their team had a similar reaction.
Who?
Julie asked.
I didn't even know you were dating.
I bet I know, said Sam. I bet it's that hot little scientist chick we rescued when we killed that mutant shrieker lizard in Guatemala. What was she again? A crypto-what's-it?
Cryptozoologist, Milo said.
He looked slightly embarrassed at the attention.
Shauna studies undiscovered animals. It's been a long-distance relationship. I kind of popped the question. She said, yeah. You know.
Why didn't you tell us, man? That's great news,
Harbinger said.
I was a little distracted, what with the forces of evil and the freighter and the undead and the elves and the gargoyles and the feds and stuff.
Land. Government below. Land now.
Skippy's gravelly voice came over the radio.
Good, Milo. Find wife. Now should get more wives. Only one wife make for lonely warrior.
I'll take it under consideration, Skip, he said cheerfully.
Take her down, Harbinger ordered. Okay, team, this is it. Stay frosty. Keep your cool around the feds.
Look who's talking, Sam murmured. The feds had set up a command post that could best be described as a tent city, and they had done it all this morning. In the distance, dozens of Mississippi State Troopers blocked off the road. The members of MHI were greeted by uniformed National Guardsmen and led toward an enormous green tent. The inside of the command tent was climate-controlled and sealed against chemical, biological, and radioactive agents. It smelled faintly of new rubber and was bigger than most middle-class homes. An entire wall was covered in giant flat-screen televisions. Rows of computers were manned by military personnel or armored federal agents. Some of the screens showed real-time satellite imagery of the area in normal and thermal views. I could make out our helicopter parked on the grass. It was glowing bright yellow and red. Dozens of cameras must have been dropped over the bottoms, showing several different shots of the swamp. Agent Myers was directing the circus, and for the first time since I had met him, he had ditched the suit and dressed for battle.
Check the feed from the Predator drones. Send another one to parallel the Hatchie River. Have the AWACS divert all air traffic out of this area. I want those bombers in the air now. I want some with napalm and some with penetrators if they're underground. Where are those Abrams?
They are on 72, ETA 15 minutes, sir, answered one of the feds as he tapped away on one of the many computers. They're passing through the town of Walnut.
Good. We may need to steamroll something,
Myers said as he nervously tugged at the straps on his armor.
Sir, what about final option? Asked one of the agents at a computer. Tell the Pentagon to scramble the B-1. Have it ready. What's the payload on that?
We are cleared for low tactical yield,
5 kilotons. Minimal radiation. Civilian casualties? He asked. Within an acceptable level. This area is sparsely populated.
Excellent, he said slowly.
Holy shit! They're going to nuke Mississippi,
Holly said. Myers turned around. The National Guard lieutenant that had let us in saluted.
Sir, here are the guests you were expecting.
About damn time, Earl.
Where the hell have you been?
If you wanted us sooner, Myers, you should have sent a jet,
he explained casually.
Are you really authorized to go nuclear?
I'm authorized to tow the moon down here and crash it into Earth if I think it would help,
Myers answered sharply.
If you haven't noticed, somebody is planning on destroying all life on this planet. The President is willing to do what it takes to solve this problem. So, as a last resort, yes, I'm ready to go nuclear.
Say, when did they put you in charge of the Monster Control Bureau anyway?
Harbinger asked.
When I saw you in Texas, you were still just an assistant director.
Myers fixed my boss with a look that would have killed most people. I didn't know what it was, but there was certainly some bad history between these two men.
Last Friday, he answered sullenly. I'm just interim director until the President appoints somebody else. I received the call, and a few hours later I hear from you that 7 master vampires just touched down. It's been a hell of a week.
So that's why you've been cranky, Harbinger answered wryly. The senior agent sighed.
Look, are you going to take us to this Wendigo thing or not?
I'll do it. No vehicles, though. He isn't going to come out if there are vehicles, and you'll need to pull the air cover back.
I guess I don't have much choice.
Myers gestured toward one of the screens, a real-time satellite feed of the Natchez bottom area. Most of the picture, including the area that we were currently in, was perfectly and surprisingly clear. The center of the screen, however, was fogged.
$1 billion in equipment, and I can't get a clear picture of the interior of the bottoms. No cameras will work more than 30 feet into the swamp. I'm reduced to talking to Indian fairy tales.
You know how Natchez Bottom is. It don't obey the same rules as the rest of the world.
I know. All right, then, let's get this over with.
The roof of the tent began to rattle as the rain started.
It was clear 5 minutes ago,
Lee said to me anxiously.
Welcome to Mississippi, I answered.
The Monster Control Bureau men were honed and ready, picked from elite military units and trained to a standard far surpassing our own. Every one of them appeared to be chiseled from solid muscle and rock-hard bone. They made my team look a little dumpy.
Agent Franks, ready the men,
Myers ordered as we approached the waiting group. Franks gave me a slight nod of recognition when he saw me. He emotionlessly returned to his men.
Listen up,
Franks shouted. The 30 black-armored men snapped to attention, weapons bouncing in their slings, magazines and explosives clanking. They regarded us with steely eyes. Some were bruised from their brief encounter with the MHI the day before. Harbinger ducked under an overhanging tarp and nonchalantly lit a cigarette. The cold, drizzling rain quickly soaked us all to the bone.
"Pay attention, men!"
Myers spoke loudly, but rather than resembling a military leader rallying the troops, he still made me think of a college professor giving a lecture.
We are going into Natchez Bottom. This is possibly one of the most dangerous places in the world. Once we get into the swamp, you will need to keep your wits about you. Things are not always what they seem in the bottoms. It is an intersection of all that is wrong in the universe. Do not fire until I or Agent Franks order you to do so. We are searching for the Cursed One and 7 Master Vampires.
Some of the men began to mutter and shift nervously. I was glad to see that. They may have been hard-charging warriors, but at least they weren't stupid about it.
Don't worry, men. We are not going in looking for a fight. Right now we are going in to speak with one of the creatures in the swamp. It will provide us with the location of the enemy, and they will be dealt with using overwhelming force, Myers assured them. Even masters are not so tough when you carpet-bomb them.
We might have a man in there, Myers,
Harbinger said coldly.
Then you are more than welcome to go in and rescue him before we airstrike, Myers answered.
Nothing personal, but I'm not risking 30 good men for one of yours, the agent continued. The 10 individuals standing behind me, some of you already may have made their acquaintance.
A few of the bruised feds nodded sullenly. One of the men that had beat down Trip made a thumping motion with his fist.
Are from MHI. They are here to make contact with the swamp creature and extract information. After that, they get out of the way. Earl, if you would tell us about this creature, please.
Harbinger tossed his cigarette to the ground, giving up because of the soaking rain.
It's a Wendigo. If you see something 10 feet tall and real scary-looking, don't shoot at it. You make him angry.
Any questions? Myers asked.
Sir, how are we supposed to work with these people? We've got 3 men in the hospital because of them.
The agent who asked that had a bandage over his nose. He glared at me when he spoke. It wasn't my fault he didn't know how to block.
You will do as you're told, Myers said coldly.
One of the agents raised his hand.
What about sensor arrays?
They don't seem to work in the bottoms. We will take our portable gear and hopefully we will get some reception the deeper we get, but I would not count on it.
Another agent asked,
How about the robots?
Same thing. We can't count on electronics in the bottoms. The last thing we need is for one of their sensors to mistake some of us for undead and blast us. The recognition software only runs 98% in optimal conditions.
Air support?
Not until after we speak with this Wendigo thing. We can call them in if we have an emergency.
Armor backup?
Abrams are en route and will arrive shortly. However, they will not be able to operate in most of the terrain. Ground is too soft.
What a bunch of babies, Sam whispered to me. We don't ever get none of that cool stuff.
Geez, Milo, how come we don't have killer robots?
Julie asked.
You write the check,
he answered.
Attention, team. Form up. Franks has operational command. I will remain at the command center in radio contact.
Myers signaled toward his second in command.
Which way, Earl?
Harbinger pointed towards the heart of the swamp. Natchee Bottom was a still and unnatural place. The small amounts of ground were soft and treacherous. Long patches were covered in dank, fetid water, thick and overgrown with gnarled trees and thorned vines that grabbed and clutched at you. Roots and other unknown items were always underfoot, waiting to cause the unwary to stumble. The rain dripped down through the thick canopy of trees. It was early in the morning, but it was dark inside the bottoms.
"Welcome to Dagobah,"
Trip joked.
"You are such a geek,"
Holly retorted. I swatted a mosquito that landed on my cheek. It splattered bloodily. It was as big around as a dime. I swore under my breath.
"Just wait until we get done and you check for leeches," Sam said. "You can have hundreds of those suckers on you and not know it."
"And ticks. Don't forget the ticks," Milo added. "Don't pay them any attention," Julie said. "The leeches and ticks here are big enough that you'll feel them when they latch on."
"Good," I answered. "I don't want to waste my time with wussy insects."
I adjusted Abomination and forded on into the waist-deep muck. The agents had broken into 3 teams, with MHI bringing up the rear in a rough diamond pattern. The agents moved like ghosts through the trees. They communicated totally with hand signals, and had drilled to the point that each team was a seamless blending of skill. I had to admit, they were pretty impressive in action. Then there was us.
Wow! Did you see the size of that snake?
That wasn't a snake. It was a log.
Hey, are there crocodiles here?
Alligators, moron. Crocodiles are in Africa.
No, they aren't. Those are in Australia.
Well, actually, they're in both.
You can tell the difference by the snout. I saw that on Animal Planet.
I idly wondered if the Monster Control Bureau were hiring. Harbinger tapped me on the shoulder.
Do you sense anything?
No. It's just creepy.
Why?
You felt the cursed one. You know him better than the rest of us. I just hope you would know when he's near.
Oh.
Hey, Earl,
I whispered.
I've got a question for you. How come we don't move like the feds, all quiet and fast? We're just kind of clumped up and shooting the bull.
Seems kind of unprofessional in comparison, don't it?
He asked. I nodded.
Well, let's look at this for a moment. I've been doing this kind of thing for a real long time, so I'm going to let you in on my philosophy.
He lowered his Tommy gun and ducked under some puncture vines.
See how those guys are all intense, real quiet-like?
Yeah.
All of them learned how to fight against human beings. Monsters are different. I bet most of those guys are multiple combat vets. Were we to fight them, we would get our asses kicked because they know how to fight people.
You got them pretty good last night.
Element of surprise, Owen. If I were to try that again, they would pump my guts full of lead. Now here's the thing. They're moving like they're up against things with the same senses as them. I've got bad news. If the Masters are in this swamp, they already know we're here. And as far as being quiet so they can't sneak up on you, if a Master wants to sneak up on you, they are going to do it. Doesn't matter who you are. Well, with a few exceptions.
He nodded towards Skippy and his brother Edward. They were slightly apart from the group, heads cocked as they listened intently and sniffed the air. The two orcs were dressed in black and wearing their balaclavas, though they had ditched their glasses. Their yellow eyes studied the trees and the murky water with great interest. Skippy cradled an old AK-47, adorned with feathers and small animal bones, while Edward's hands were empty, but with a pair of short swords strapped over his back. He looked like a ninja.
How come Ed doesn't have a gun?
He's a lousy shot. Anyways, now those boys, they are our early warning system. Ed goes for his sword, get ready. Orcs sense things different than us.
What about you? I asked seriously. Obviously, Harbinger had some gifts that were not normal.
Me? I've just got more experience is all. Don't dwell on it.
He chuckled.
Back to your question. Now here's the real difference between us and the feds. They always act like that. We're not creatures of habit. We can tailor our behavior for the situation. If we need to be quiet, we can be quiet. If we need to be fast, we can be fast. But have you noticed the biggest difference between us and them?
They're jerk-offs?
Besides that.
I thought about it for a moment. I watched as one of the feds scurried behind a patch of stunted trees. He scanned around him nervously, the barrel of his stubby F-2000 poking around quickly as he heard the splash of a small swamp animal. Relieved, he quickly moved on.
Some of them are terrified, I answered.
Bingo. They're quiet, but that means they can't talk to their team. That means that their minds are totally on their surroundings. And if you ain't noticed, we're strolling through one of the most evil places in the world. A place like this gnaws at your mind. You start to see things out the corner of your eye. Pretty soon you're seeing ghosts, and I ain't talking about the friendly kind like you've got riding around in your head. I mean the bad kind that are jealous of the living and want you to be just as miserable as they are. While those feds are getting nervous and jumpy, their minds playing tricks on them, When it comes time to throw down, we're going to be just fine. That's why you see my team shooting the bull.
It keeps their minds off of all this. I gestured at the drizzly blackness. As I concentrated on the swamp, I could feel the chill, the cold, the eons of hate, and the ancient evil that lay under the murky water. I looked away and turned back to my team. I'm with you. We continued on, drenched by the splashing mud and the drizzling rain. It was summer, but it was probably only 40 degrees inside Natchy Bottom. I was shivering beneath my heavy armor. I did not envy the smaller hunters who lacked my insulating body fat. Who's laughing now, skinny people? The deeper we got into the swamp, the darker and more sinister it grew. After an hour of walking, the radio finally crackled. We had previously tuned into the Fed's secure frequency. This is Alpha Team. We have a contact. There are some huts on a little island, 100 yards south of us. They appear to be inhabited. Huts have some sort of light source, and there are some cooking fires. Over. Our team halted, waiting for more information. I used the opportunity to spray more bug repellent onto my exposed skin. This is Delta, replied Myers. Investigate. Proceed with caution. Over. Harbinger scowled, and his nostrils flared as he sniffed the air. Our leader looked uneasy as he studied the surrounding swamp. He looked to Skippy and Edward. The orc studied the air. Skippy shook his head in the negative. Harbinger got on the radio.
Belay that order, Alpha Team. Do not make contact. MHI, get off my radio net, Myers snapped. What color are the lights in those shacks? Harbinger asked. I bet they're green.
This is Alpha. The lights are green. I repeat, green. Over.
Fall back, Alpha. Fall back unless you want to get the marrow sucked out of your bones. This is Delta, Alpha. Ignore that order and check out those structures. Over. Myers, you dumbass. Pull your men back or you're going to lose a whole team. And then we're going to have to waste a day messing with the things on that island, and they don't have anything to do with what we're after. Alpha Team, listen up. If you step foot on that island, you're dead men. By the time we get over there, they'll have skinned you and eaten your eyeballs right out of your heads.
He let go of the mic, and then thought better of it.
Over, he added.
What are they, Earl?
Julie asked with some concern. He just held up a hand and waited for Myers' response. A minute passed.
This is Alpha. What should we do, sir? Over.
Finally, Myers responded.
Fall back, Alpha. Ignore the structures for now. Mark them on your GPS for future investigation. Over.
To your funeral,
Harbinger said into the radio.
What are they?
Tripp asked nervously.
Humboldt folk, he explained.
Most of the hunters looked at each other in confusion. Only the senior hunters nodded in understanding.
They just want to be left alone, is all. Alpha Team is lucky they didn't set foot on that island. The folk don't let trespassers leave. Ever.
No, Earl. You forget something. We're real lucky our team isn't the one that happened to cross it.
Julie corrected him.
They wouldn't leave their circle to attack Alpha. They're all male. For us, they might have made an exception.
What do you mean? Tripp asked quietly.
The folk tend to run real short on fertile females, Julie answered.
She quickly checked her weapons.
Holly, if you get attacked by some strange-looking people with a green glow about them, save your last bullet for yourself.
She was not joking.
What are they?
Holly asked. She held her 308 Vepr and scanned the surrounding trees.
What were they is a better question, Harbinger responded. And that's a story that I'm going to save for when we're standing in a warm, sunshiny place. Come on, team. We're wasting daylight.
Somewhere in the distance, strange animals cried. Chapter 22. Hours passed as we trudged deeper into the heart of the evil swamp, yet we had not gone very far. The going was slow in Natchy Bottom. It was afternoon, and the rain had not let up. The water level had risen, and walkable land was becoming scarcer. All too often we were forced to wade through the murk, unseen things grasping at our boots, mud sucking us down. At this point we were all so coated in filth that it was becoming difficult to tell who was who. The shorter hunters had it particularly bad, often having to wade through water that came up over their chest and being forced to hold their weapons above their heads. At one point, Lee slipped and disappeared beneath the water and did not come up immediately. Sam dived under and retrieved him, bringing the other hunter up, sputtering and choking. Lee swore that the roots had not wanted to let him go. I noticed that the mood of the group had become darker and more somber. The further we went into Natchy Bottom, the more it seemed to suck at a person's happiness and will to live. It really was a bad place. I could feel that something was watching us. Unknown insects crawled or slithered inside my clothing. "Stop," Harbinger ordered. The team complied, weapons at the ready. "This is it." I looked around. It looked just like every other patch of gray and black muck and mutant trees that I had been looking at all morning. I would certainly hate to get lost in here. "Yes. Everybody stay quiet. No sudden moves. Don't point your weapons at the Wendigo." He got on the radio. "Franks, call a halt. This is the place. I'm going to make contact." "This is Delta. I want my men there with you. Over." Meyer's voice was distorted and hard to hear through the static.
"Alpha, Bravo, set up a perimeter. Charlie with me. Hold up, MHI. Over."
Frank stated over the radio.
"All right. My favorite person in the whole world," I muttered. "My good buddy Agent Franks gets to hang out with us."
My tongue unconsciously probed the gaps in my gums from where he had smashed out my teeth.
"He ain't so bad for a bureaucratic killing machine," Tripp said.
"I heard he once burned a busload of nuns because he thought there was a zombie on board," Sam added.
"No, those were orphans," Milo corrected. "He's actually kind of cute in a psychopathic way," Holly said.
"Ew," I responded. "That's sick."
"Hey, some girls go for that side of beef thug look." She winked at Julie.
I could tell our sharpshooter's cheek turned red beneath the coating of grime. Personally, besides the muscles, I did not think that I looked like Frank's at all. I was, after all, much better looking. Well, in my opinion, at least.
"I said quiet,"
Harbinger admonished. The team settled down. Charlie team materialized out of the mist a few minutes later, moving like ghosts. Frank looked like Swamp Thing, coated in mud and moss. He made a few rapid hand signals, and his team disappeared into the trees.
"Okay,"
he grunted as he knelt in the mud amongst my team.
"Y'all sit tight. I'm going over there."
Harbinger pointed out a small clump of land, almost tall enough to be dry.
"I'll be right back. Franks, you'd best keep your men under control."
"Don't worry," the quiet man stated.
Harbinger nodded and moved quickly away, sloshing through the mud, stepping on roots and semi-solid land whenever possible.
"How's your stomach?"
Franks asked as he studied the terrain.
"Sore? How are your nuts?" I whispered back. "Fine."
He shifted his gun in his big hands.
"I killed the last guy who tried to kick me like that."
"Hey, asshole, if we're comparing notes,
I think you've hit me a lot more times than I've hit you.
Will you two shut up? Julie hissed.
Harbinger had reached the island. He hung his Tommy gun in the branches of a tree, set down his revolver and grenades, and finally stabbed his Bowie knife into the trunk, leaving it there vibrating slightly. He left his weapons behind and walked slowly up the mud hill. At the summit, he sat down cross-legged, back toward us, and waited.
"Probably a stupid question at this point," Tripp whispered. "But what's a Wendigo exactly?" "A shaman who was cursed for committing an unforgivable act, usually something cannibalistic. Doomed to walk the earth forever, guardians of the land and its original inhabitants," Julie answered softly. "It's a horrible fate."
The swamp grew still. The rain stopped. The constant croaking and chittering of amphibians and insects abruptly died. The tiny bit of light that we had been getting through the canopy went away, leaving us in near darkness. A shiver ran down my spine. It felt almost sterile and impossibly lifeless. An eerie illumination slowly rose from the other side of the hill, highlighting Harbinger as he sat perfectly still. Something moved in the unnatural light. Something huge. Impossibly tall, but startlingly lean. All we could see was a silhouette of billowing skins, 10 feet tall, with antlers like a deer rising from the center of its elongated head. An alien figure out of our nightmares. It was not of this world. The thing stopped before Harbinger. Our team leader did not move. I realized I was holding my breath. The antlered being was motionless, its long limbs folded tight against its body, giving us no clue as to its unnatural structure. I could not see the Wendigo's facial features, and for that I was thankful. If they were conversing, we could not tell. Other shapes moved on the island, giant, hulking things, bristling with hair and mud, just outside the circle of pale light. A horrible smell drifted across the water. I gagged involuntarily. After a few minutes of silence, the Wendigo turned and drifted off of the island. The hairy beasts ambled away, disappearing into the swamp. The gray light died. The rain began to pelt us again. Gradually, the light returned to its natural levels, and frogs began to croak. The swamp returned to normal, or at least as normal as a place like Natchy Bottom could be.
"That was the Wendigo," Julie told us. "The other things were skunk apes, swamp Sasquatches. It protects them, keeps them away from our world. They are why I didn't want your people," she nodded at Frank's, "to just come in here and blow the whole place up."
"Just big monkeys," the Fed grunted.
Julie started to reply, but then bit her tongue. Arguing with Franks would be like beating your head against a block of granite.
"Uh-oh," I said. "That don't look good."
Once the mysterious being had gone, Harbinger had leapt to his feet and slid down the hill, grabbed his weapons, and came leaping across the water, splashing toward us as fast as he could.
"It's a trap!"
he shouted in our direction.
"Alpha, Bravo, go hot," Franks ordered.
Harbinger skidded into us, breathing heavy. He looked like he had seen a ghost. I suppose in a way he had.
"The cursed one ain't here. The vampires ain't here. But they summoned something else. Something is waiting for us. It was a trick."
He turned to Franks.
"We need immediate extraction and air cover."
The silent Fed did not argue.
"Delta, this is Charlie. We need immediate evac. Over."
Nothing. Franks repeated his request. Still no response. A regular man would have looked concerned at being stuck near the crossroads of all badness, in the middle of an ambush set by creatures of unspeakable evil. He shrugged, apparently unperturbed.
The signal isn't getting out, Julie said. How could it be a trap? My dad told us.
She trailed off.
Oh, no.
He told us what Susan wanted him to, Harbinger snapped. He kicked a tree stump. Damn it, I should have thought of that. We have to get out of here.
Alpha, Bravo, come in,
Frank said.
Nothing.
He stood up and pointed at some of his men. He made several rapid hand signals and pumped his fist in the air. They nodded, leapt to their feet, and sloshed in the direction of the other teams.
We fall back to the extraction zone. Can you call in air cover with flares?
Sam asked.
Already done,
he answered as something boomed from the direction of Charlie team. A few seconds later, red flares erupted high above us and slowly drifted toward the thick canopy of trees.
I just hope they see them in the bad visibility, Milo said, looking up at the rain and the roiling clouds.
From the distance came a sound like the blowing of a horn, a deep rumbling that we all felt in the pits of our stomachs. The low note continued for several seconds and then trailed off. Another horn blew to our south, and then another to the east.
Earl, what did they summon?
I asked. All I knew was if they had been brought here by Lord Machado, they were not going to be friendly.
I don't know.
His face was streaked with mud, and his eyes narrowed dangerously.
But the Wendigo said to get out. He said it's beyond his power, so it's bad. Real bad. I told him to get his people out of here. So if you see something that ain't human, shoot it.
More horns sounded. Now they were all around us. Several rang out between us and the way that we had come from.
Sounds like they're not going to let us retreat.
Julie snapped her M14 to her shoulder and scanned through the scope. The MHI staff began to fan out, weapons at the ready, looking for defensive positions. Deprived of his radio, Frank started to bellow orders to his men.
Dig in! Claymores! Hit them when they come for us! At my signal, push through to the south!
That was our end of the diamond.
Your men up to being the tip of the spear?
He asked Harbinger.
Of course,
our team leader answered with far more confidence than I felt. Ed's swords flashed silver in the low light as he pulled them smoothly from their sheaths. The blades were short and thick and wickedly sharp. He cracked his neck and vertebrae. The rest of us were armed with a variety of firearms, plus each person was packing along some form of heavier ordnance. RPGs, grenade launchers, and Milo had some sort of homemade lightweight flamethrower. It hummed ominously when he switched it on, heavily pressurized with napalm.
Find cover, Harbinger ordered. We don't know what they are, so hit them with everything.
The squad complied. To our left, Charlie team dug down. To our right was Alpha. Bravo was behind us. Franks moved amongst his men, giving orders, pointing out problems, assigning areas of responsibility, offering reassurance while the rumble of unnatural horns sounded in the distance. He may have been a violent, bloodthirsty scumbag, but he was a good leader.
Get lower, Trip, Harbinger suggested as he paced among us. Holly, you have a clear area behind you, so you can use the RPG if we need it. Lee, don't hug right against that tree. It limits your mobility. Step back a bit and you still have cover.
We had a great leader as well.
Looking good, hunters. It ain't gonna be nothing we can't handle.
I hate the part when you don't know what the bad guys are,
Sam said quietly as he pressed his bulk behind a mound of tree roots. The low rumbling horns stopped. The rain slapped against the water.
Harbinger,
Skippy grunted. The orc swiveled his head from side to side as he sniffed the air.
They come.
What are they, Skip? Julie asked.
Not know,
he answered.
Smell. Smell not from here.
The 10 of us were spread out over a 40-foot area, holding low behind trees,
roots, logs, and mud. Each of us was scanning the swamp for threats. The rain and mist made it difficult to see very far. My area of responsibility was a confused mass of light and shadows, vines and trees, moss and mud. Nothing moved. The swamp was quiet, except for the noises of small animals and the occasional bubble of mysterious organic gases creeping to the surface. Gunfire and explosions erupted to the north. Bravo team had made contact. Some of the newbies jumped at the sounds and began to turn.
"Hold!"
Harbinger shouted.
"Watch your area. That's their problem. Deal with yours."
I forced myself back into position as the supersonic cracks of rifle bullets and the duller whumps of high explosive filled the air. Bravo team was unleashing hell upon something. After several seconds, the initial salvo died down until there was only a sporadic firing of weapons. Then nothing. Frank's deep voice drifted through the trees, shouting orders and commands to his men.
"Bah, whatever they are, they ain't so tough,"
Sam said as he spit into the water. Harbinger held up his hand for quiet. He closed his eyes and listened intently, almost as if he was meditating. Suddenly he stiffened and swore quietly. There was a whistling noise from the direction of Bravo, then another and another, until the swamp echoed with dozens of the strange sounds, and then the damp thuds of hundreds of separate impacts. Wails of pain and human agony followed.
"What was that?"
Lee blurted, a hint of terror in his voice. He did not get an answer. Harbinger snapped his Tommy gun into position and squeezed off a long, controlled burst into a patch of black water. The .45 slugs tore into the muck and geysered upwards. The surface exploded under the impacts as something sprang upward through the mist. I got a brief glimpse of the first creature before it was torn to pieces in the storm of hot lead and silver, orange fluids spraying into the surrounding foliage. It was about the size of a man, only hunched and misshapen. Insectile in its joints and extra limbs, the creature seemed all unnatural angles and claws, with two sets of interlocked jaws and dozens of red eyes set into a blunted skull of a face. It ruptured open as the bullets pierced its carapace, almost as if its internal contents had been under great pressure. The torn thing thrashed about, falling backwards into the muck, finally lying still. It was only because of my hearing protection and its electronic amplification of sound that I was able to hear Julie talking to herself. She sounded terrified and shaken. Julie Shackelford did not scare easily.
"Not them. Not again."
"What was that thing?"
Holly shouted. None of the experienced hunters answered. I lifted my cheek from my stock, looking over at the others. Milo blinked slowly, as if in disbelief. Sam stared silently into the distance. Julie had begun to shake uncontrollably. Harbinger changed magazines, looking down at his weapon instead of us. In the background, more screams and random gunfire erupted from Bravo. Finally, Harbinger pulled the bolt back, regarded it solemnly, and finally answered us.
"It's the things from the Christmas party."
"God help us," Milo said.
"This time we're armed, though," Sam answered. "It was hand to hand then. Now we got guns."
"So do they," Harbinger replied sadly. "So do they."
"Incoming!"
Julie shouted as she fired into the swamp. Orange and red shapes appeared from the murk or came charging out of the fog. Once again I heard the whistling noise, only this time it was closer, much closer. Something impacted the mud inches from my face, spraying my goggles. It appeared to be a long bone spine, dripping in dense orange fluid. I aimed at the source, a hunched in